okay, you're starting to kind of settle down from like 3 days of, a dream of landing in a foreign land, which no one can conceive of the hectic and chaos, and somehow underneath it's supposed to be holy, but it sure doesn't look it, from first glance. But there is something you can feel in this place. Mm-hmm. And you could produce that, and it's not produce it in a sense, you can open the floodgates anywhere in the world. And so that's why people come here, and if they really, people are pulled here. In fact, Ramana Maharshi once said, no one comes to Arunachala. They are pulled, Arunachala permits them, but this is the same anywhere in the world. When it's your time, the brass ring comes around and you grab it. Now, of course, the human will is always there. And even when you take up the practice or take up sadhana, the human will is there to say, let go for a while. So we're talking about the methods of sadhana. That first, let's define sadhana. The Sanskrit word sadhana comes from the root sadhan. Sadhan means an instrument or a tool. When you put the na on the end, sadhana, it means the way that you're using this instrument or tool. And it's very much like a sculptor. So we say us now in our present state. With all of our imagined and also real accomplishments, even in the spiritual, and all of our quote-unquote accomplishments, we're still pretty much a granite stone that needs to be hacked at and refined. Mm-hmm. Okay, the essence is there in us because we're given a human birth, we're given grace, and we're given aspiration. We have realization and all these things, and this is where a lot of people are right when they say you are that. But to go so far as to say there's nothing left to do, that's just not Ramana Maharshi's teaching. In fact, it's not the teaching of any great being. And so, even though the essence of the granite, the purity of the granite is there, it needs to be molded, hacked at, changed, transformed, refined. So sadhana is the method, method where you can refine or heighten your being, and it's a sense of becoming receptive, and then real experience of the self. See in Kaivalya Upanishad, which is, by the way, one of the Advaitic, main Advaita, even though it's a minor Upanishad, they quote it, Kaivalya Upanishad as one of the principal Upanishads for the Advaitic theory. Mm-hmm. The Advaitic theory being, you are that, there's nothing left to do. In the Kaivalya Upanishad, it says that what we actually are after is not jnana, or knowledge, it's vijnana, Vedanta. V-I-J-N-A-N-A. Vijnana means, when you put that V in front of jnana, it means the special experience that comes from the knowledge of the self. That means it's a real palpable revelation. And so, in other words, a transformation and refinement has to come. So, now we're talking about meditation mainly, because as Bhagavan was saying, it's a fight. It has to go. It's interesting because the quote we read, he said, many thoughts come and invade the one thought. Okay. Yeah. So, let's talk about the different methods of the one thought. For some people, it is just simply watching the breath. The thought of awareness, the thought of keeping track of the movement of breath. Now, when I'm talking, you might think this is, some people call it Vipassana or breath meditation. That might be, just a Buddhist theory. But if you go to the Devi temple here at Rashiram Maharshi Ashram, and you go outside to that outer room where that big, very elaborate granite sofa is with that, the statue in front of it, which, by the way, they built for Ramana Maharshi. They said, Ketcha, who was there as a 10-year-old, which said he hated it because he kept slipping off of it. Mm-hmm. They would put mats and,
It's very beautiful.
And because it was slick granite and not, a normal bed, he kind of slipped down and he hated it. But, this is what people do. He's the guru of God, so they give him the best. But right above it, if you look above on the wall, they had a Sanskrit sloka that's etched and painted gold. That's what's called the famous Ek Shlok, the one sloka, which kind of was something Lama Maharshi said. And if you had someone translate it from Sanskrit, it'll say, if you follow the I thought to its root, or follow the breath to its source, you'll arrive at the self. So he's intimating that. Even to be more concrete, that the idea of does breath have an integral part in meditation? There is the book called, which is in the library. It's called Vichara Sangraha, or Self-Inquiry.
Yeah.
And it's a small booklet. And actually, it was the original source from it between the years 1920 and 1922. Bhagavan was in Virupaksha Cave, and there was a man who was a devotee, but he worked, I think he was worked in some government office. Almost every night, he came up, and he would talk with Shravana Maharshi and receive instruction, literally, this close, with talking with Bhagavan, and being told, you know, how to do it. Now, the interesting thing was, at the majority of this time, Bhagavan was in mona. He was just in silence. But he was handwriting answers. And even these handwritten answers are there's somewhere in the archives, that big fancy building. Mm-hmm. So you know, we see this is the pure teaching. Because it's, even though it's subject to later editing, we know the original's there. You know? And so this is what Bhagavan said. So this, the man who was living in town, his name was Gambira. He was also a Rama Bhakta, which meant that he was kind of a bhakti, but he was, so was Bhagavan, in that sense. Because they say Bhagavan was just a jnani, he was a bhakti. And the greatest proof is, Bhagavan would sit in the old hall, and people would be sitting around. And he would be reading the lives of what's called the Nayanar saints, the 63 Shaivite saints of Tamil Nadu. Mm-hmm. And Bhagavan would start to read the tales, and Bhagavan would just start to weep, literally just cry. And he would get choked up, and his tears were streaming down his face, and he'd say to people, I can't go on. I just can't. It's just too much. And he would, when he would tell stories, he would animate, you know, like the Lord came and embraced, and Bhagavan would kind of put his arm, and he would just start weeping. So Gambiram, he was talking to the source, he knew. So Gambiram is asking questions, and at one point, and this I believe is originally it was like 23 or 28 questions and answers compiled this entire book of Vichara Sangraha. If I'm correct, it's what I'm going to quote now starts on number 19. Where Gambiram makes this incredible statement. He says, Bhagavan, now to a degree, I think I have this fairly well memorized, but it's a little bit paraphrased. It says, Bhagavan, although I have listened to your instruction on self-inquiry in such great detail, still my mind has no peace. Why is this? And Bhagavan says, now it's interesting because in the early translations, Bhagavan now is not speaking to him directly by saying, you don't have peace because you're doing this or not doing that. Bhagavan starts to, the words, he's speaking in general in a sense, a universal sense. He's speaking to us. Because he says, the reason for the lack of peace of mind, it doesn't say your mind, speaking to Gambira. He says the reason is you lack strength of mind. Again, now we're starting to see what Arthur Osborn put down. And Bhagavan is saying meditation is a fight. Well, an exercise like a fight, what happens when you engage in it? You get stronger. Paramahansa Yogananda would always say that if you want to get strong, even in athletics or in wrestling, you wrestle someone who's better than you, who's stronger than you, and you're going to lose, but you're going to, next time you're just going to lose with a little more strength, and then finally it's going to be a draw, and then finally you'll no doubt win. But you don't get strength by fighting someone weaker than you are. So, Bhagavan said, you lack strength of mind. And so, too bad we don't have the book with us, because it would be just wonderful just to read it straight. So then, Gambhira says, what are the means for strength of mind? And Bhagavan says, breath meditation is the best means for strengthening the mind. And so now we're saying, what did he mean by breath meditation? Gambhira continues to say, do you mean the pranayama, you know, the retention, you know, of the breath, the inhalation, exhalation, and all this? And Bhagavan says, no. He says, it's the watching of the mind. In fact, he refers to it in many places, even in Bhagavad and Ramana Gita, Sri Ramana Gita. Bhagavan said, it describes, it's a chapter 6 of that. He says, it's simply watching the mind like a tethered animal. You have one thought, which kind of holds the mind, and you're aware of the breath at the same time. Now, this is traditional, the most traditional meditation according to not only Hindu, but Buddhist and early Christianity. Mm-hmm. Whereas this is the method where you're keeping aware of the movement of the movement, okay, the movement of breath. Then if we want to say why, the tradition is the mind is like an animal. The mind is a living being, and it thrives on movement. Like Dracula said, the blood is the life. The circuit for us, embodied creatures, circulation is our life. Okay? For the mind, movement is its life. As soon as you get the mind still, it starts to disintegrate. And of course, it'll vibrate and run back and forth, but if you keep it still, it'll just become, it'll just melt. This is the key. But getting it still is the first thing. So, the mind, if it starts to feel like it's being caged, it'll start to explode on you, and the way it does it is to cause imagination of so many millions of thoughts, and then you just get lost in it. So what we're trying to do is reduce the multifarious or innumerable movements of the mind to one movement. Okay? Now, the breath is moving, right? It's moving in and out. If you're watching the movement of the breath, the mind, you in a sense trick it, because you say, okay, focus on this movement, and you watch it at one point, not in and out, but some people say the tip of the nose, some people say the rise and fall of the abdomen, or the expansion of the chest. Really the more traditional is the tip of the nose or inside the nostrils. You're feeling the movement now, and the rhythm of it. The rhythm is really important. The mind gets satisfied. It says, okay, I'm moving. I'm not being suffocated. They're not trying to kill me. You know, this intention of this being here, you know, you and me, giving me, you know, a leash. So I'm happy, I'm running back and forth, and I'm moving. But what happens is, when that happens, when you start watching the breath, it is, in a sense, like they say in the Christian terminology, it's the ladder of the divine ascent. When the, because Bhagavan said, if you follow the breath to the source, just you'll arrive at the self. Because it starts, the breath starts to become attenuated, or becomes simplified, purified, and starts to become still. Now, what happens is, the mind who's watching the breath is starting to now attenuate and become slow to a still point. The mind is following the same thing. Bhagavan, in one place, he said, this is also in Vichara-saṅgraha, he says, it makes, these are his words, it's perfectly logical that the mind will become still through breath awareness, because both the mind and the breath are the element of vayu. Vayu meaning wind. And when you calm one, when one becomes calm, the other becomes calm. So, but this is in a sense, for most people, the foundation of meditation. But then there is mantra. There is what is the name of God which is that transforming element. Because we don't just want to make the mind still. We want this change. We want this transformation to take place. We want this deification, really. Mm-hmm. And so the name of God is there. And Bhagavan, was not exempt from this at all. Being traditional, if you read, for instance, Murugunar's diaries, the book is called Panamalai, which is a kind of condensation. And really it is, Murugunar Swami was, of course, one of the very close disciples. And Bhagavan would constantly be giving instructions to him, or also giving instructions in general, and he would write it down. Mm-hmm. This is, in a sense, his diary leaves. Bhagavan, it says in that book, and it's in the section called Practice, but it says, Murugunar's writing, he said, Bhagavan gave mantra initiation, gave the name Shiva Shiva, mm-hmm. or whether it was Shivaya Nama, or just the name of God Shiva, he gave it to Murugunar, he gave it to Annamalai Swami, mm-hmm. he gave it to the brother Rangam, an unknown Harijan. Also there was, we know, a lady who has now left her body, who was a young woman, maybe in her 20s, or young lady. Her name was Camacho. Camacho was the woman. It just so happened that she would come to Bhagavan very early in the morning, 3-4 o'clock or something. How she would get away, because she had to sneak out of the house. In those days, the Brahmin girls, you couldn't. But she had an attendant or something. And Bhagavan normally would be kind of just sitting, you know, up and aware, just at 2 o'clock in the morning, and then his attendants, one by one, would go out for calls of nature and their bath. Bhagavan, everything went by clockwork. Mm-hmm. And at one point, Bhagavan was basically alone, mm-hmm. which hardly ever happened. But Bhagavan arranges. She walks in. Yeah. She walks in for Nams. You read, it's in a few different books. Bhagavan pulls out of kind of the corner of his copian a sheet of paper that he had written on. And he gives it to her. Mm-hmm. And he says, this is your sadhana. Do this the rest of your life. So she unfurls the paper, and it says, in his handwriting, Om Namo Bhagavate Sri Ramanaya. Yeah. His own mantra to his own name. Mm-hmm. And so, for many people, for her it was, that's it. For others, maybe it was a method of purification, then later they would drop it, but you don't really drop it. What happens, now to get back to the practice, you're watching the breath, and that rhythm of the breath, you're synchronizing it with that name. Let's say we're just using the most traditional, the only mantra given in the Vedas was Om, the pranava mantra. With inhalation, Om, exhalation, Om, like the tolling of a bell. So now what's happening is, you're watching the breath, the mind is getting satisfied, so it's just kind of like in a very receptive, still state. And this vibration of the name of God is like filling the consciousness, transforming it, and it's called really, Bhagavan said, it causes a softening and melting within. This actual quote, I think it's in what Arthur Osborne puts it in one of his books. Bhagavan said this. No, excuse me. This is also in Panamalai. This is also in Panamalai. And if I remember correctly, it's also in a section called Practice, right around page 86. I know this stuff because I have to memorize it to put it in a book. Mm-hmm. Bhagavan had this quote. This I'm pretty sure is verbatim. He's using the word jnana vichara as a differentiator from atma vichara. Atma vichara, yes, you can say inquire into the nature of the self, or more correctly, reflection on the nature of the self. Jnana vichara is reflection on the nature of the Purusha, of the highest, the high, unmanifested mm-hmm. self. It's the highest. Yeah. So Bhagavan's quote is this, know, understand, this wondrous jnana vichara is only for those who have had a softening and melting within, which is only brought about by thinking of the feet of the Lord, which is a connotation right out of the Puranas, right out of the scriptures, remembrance of the name of God. Then Bhagavan finishes his saying, without this softening and melting within, the attachment of the I to this body will never cease to be. Pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
And so he's talking about that. So you're doing this, and then this is the sadhana, in the sense, this is, but it's an integrated practice. In other words, this is your morning and evening practice, and maybe throughout the day you're trying to watch your breath, and if you're using Om with some mantra, which it should be the name of God, you don't want to be using, you know, some of these elaborate bijas and things, because, you know, a lot of gurus, quote-unquote gurus, globe-trotting gurus especially, will give you bija mantras. They do give you powers, and they do give you siddhis or special kind of sight and things, because that's what people want. But if, you know, you want to get out of this, you know, life-death cycle, like Mother Nandamai said, what should happen to us is death should die.